accession number 24735, Richard. Accession number 24731, Real 5.
Mr. Emery, Real 5. Now, I believe you had a couple of words you wanted to say about the first two colonels you'd had.
First colonel is, he was a bit, never had really much to say to him.
Who was he?
Colonel Iliff, and Lieutenant Colonel I-double-L-I-double-F. I think there was an E on the end as well, Colonel I, but he, I never ever spoke to him. He was the colonel that the RSM paraded us in from when we went to battle school, and that was about it, but... as I say, he seemed a bit a colonel, but he didn't seem to see much of him only when you passed by and saluted him, apart from that. So come 1943, about August, he left the regiment. I don't know why he left the regiment, but he got posted, and we had a lieutenant colonel, MC something faithful it was. I think he was a Scotchman, but he was more a soldier. He used to get involved then. He sort of boosted the regiment and got them more into more severe training, for want of a better word, when we're at Great Bounds Camp. And he also used to get the officers on wireless schemes, going out with the wireless operators and using the correct procedure. And I used to have him in the truck with me. And then we used to send messages, and then they used to answer back, the officers. And he used to say, "Is that right?" I'd say, "No, that's wrong." So he should have said this. And he straight on here and give him a rocket boat. And he never had a clue, but he was that sort of a man. But I could get on with him. He was a colonel and all that, but you felt comfortable with him, put it that way. So he stayed with us, he stayed with us till 1944, but this is in advance when he left. But he was there about 5 months, I suppose, and instigated quite a lot. We used to do convoy work at night, driving.
Tell us about convoy work then. What was there to learn about driving in convoy?
Driving at night, no headlights on. We used to just drive with side lights, and I don't know if you remember, but trucks during the war had those little side lights, those little round things about 2 inches across, and the convoy leader had a blue light on, and the tail leader had the tail end charlie had a green light on, and all that was in between. And I was with the Sugar 2 wireless truck. I always had to drive the convoy leader's truck. Staff officer used to be out training Matt Reading at night, all around Kent and all that. No signpost things, they take them all down, obviously. And then we used to do that training. He had us all out on that, as I say, night schemes, go out for 2 or 3 days, sleeping rough under the hedges and all that. And he was the instigator of a lot of that, Colonel. Faithful. One thing about him, when he used to come home drunk from town, there was a song, I don't really remember, but it was a cowboy song, "Old Faithful, We Rode the Range Together." That was a song that was popular before the war, and they all used to sing that. He was walking back to war's camp, and they got close to camp, and they all shut up then. But his name fitted well in with the song. But he was quite a good, kept everybody on their toes then. And I think the standard, he instigated more PT and things like that.
So what's the next thing?
During that autumn, one thing I say, when the regiment was out on sites, then we all moved out of Great Bounds. When they were on ACAC sites, but when they weren't on ACAC, everybody moved back in the Great Bounds, and we were there as a regiment then. Another thing they instigated, that's later on. In the autumn, I went to Ashford-on-Kent with 4 more on another wireless course. What in the hell for? It seemed a complete waste of time to me. But I went there for 5 days, Ashford. We stayed in, it used to be an ex-Borstal school, so that's where we... That's all I can remember about that. Never learned anything extra, and then we came
one
up...
One thing you haven't mentioned about training a wireless was laying lines.
Telephone lines, it's a bit difficult in this country to lay telephone lines because it wouldn't seem as active service, But they taught us how to tie reef knots in if you've got a break in the line the proper way, and then bound it all up with the outside wire and then seal it, crossing roads and all that. That's where I learned to do my clove hitch to start with, so and half hitches and all things like that. But out searching for breaks in lines, and but that's what he taught us at Whitby part of that, and we did a bit of training in between that, but a lot of it was classroom work, I was saying. And
so what happened next after the wireless course?
Well, it came back. Life went on, then training. I came home on leave in after 10 days leave. One thing when I came home, I could never sleep in bed. I was coming home on leave, and the first thing I did was drag the bedclothes on the floor and sleep on the floor. And it used to upset my mother. And she said, "What's wrong?" I said, "I can't. It's too soft." You know, I always had a sound. I could sleep on the floor. First day home, I would pull the pillow on the floor and the bedclothes, and I used to sleep lovely on the floor. But I couldn't sleep in bed. That's no exaggeration. I felt more comfortable on the floor.
What would you do when you were on leave? I mean,
well, that was it. I used to come home on leave. My two pals were in the army, and all my age, and the ones that I knew were either in the Navy, Air Force, or Army, you know, and you never sort of click together for leaves. But this particular New Year's, I came home on leave, and my pal from First Airborne was home, so we had a good 7 or 8 days together.
What would you do? Were you drinking then?
I got into the habit with the rest of the round the pub. And I used to like crib as well. I used to go down and meet my pal's father down at Jolly Common and play in a crib school when I was on leave. My father liked crib as well. But normally, come on, it was a bit of a lonely time. And not only that, Bristol was swarming with Americans. Bloody thousands of them there, you know.
With what?
Americans. Yeah, they're everywhere. You know, you go in the pub. The little pub I used to go to up over Dundry, Carpenter's Arms, and I came home on leave and walked up there on my own. And it was swarming with Americans, all with their jeeps and big cars, staff cars parked out. When they got the petrol, I don't know, because it was all ration. And it took me about a quarter of an hour to get served in there. They didn't want to serve me because they were all buying. I don't know where they got the whiskey from, because whiskey and all that was higher, but they was getting that whiskeys in that pack there with their girlfriends. They had the piano going. They were swarming with Americans. And I was... Oh, I came home on leave, but I didn't worry about going back. It might have been different. I was married, but I wasn't married. I was single, you know. So we went back in then.
Still in Great Bounds.
Still at Great Bounds, yeah. Then in February, we went to another firing school up in Cumbria. That was a 3-day, that was a regimental convoy then from Kent, Great Bounds Camp. I don't know if it's a Blackwall Tunnel, one of the under the tunnel, under the Thames up, and then we were escorted by police in sections through London. And the first stop was Lutterworth. We stopped at Lutterworth. That was under campus. That was February. No water at all, except 3 standpipes, cold water for washing. And that was a staging camp overnight. And the second leg of the journey was up to Preston North End. We stayed in Preston North End football ground. That's where we slept overnight. And the third day was up to Nethertown, not far from where Sellafields is now. That was a firing camp there. So we went to Nethertown in the camp there. That's where I fired a 2-inch. That's where we learned to use a 2-inch mortar then, you know. And that was another sweepstake. We won that, our little team, with the firing a 2-inch mortar. The one that got the nearest to the rocks out in the sea won the penny or whatever it was. You know, won a lot of money, but it was... So we learned, but the signal section didn't stay there long. They decided that we should go to Egremont. Nethertown was the firing camp on the coast, but we went to Netherton, if you're going to put it down, Netherton. But they shifted the signal section into Egremont, which is a market town about 5 or 6 miles inland. Don't really know Cumbria, you know St. Bees, you know, no. We stayed in the piggery there. That's why it was called a piggery. It must have been ages old, but we slept upstairs. And there we did all our, a lot of line work there, outlaying lines, crossing the river. I forget the name of the river that you ran at the back of the piggery, but telephone lines over there, and how you do it, you know, and how you'd all this business. We also laid a line from the camp there through Egremont. I forget how we went, but all the way down the country lanes to the firing camp down at Netherton. Yeah, that was all the telegraph poles and all things like that. And people there were very, obviously it was rationing in 1944, but they were good. It was cold, but you pass somewhere and they'd be out with a great big jug of tea. Only four of us doing it, but you come out with a jug of tea, hot tea, and we were well looked after and things like that. People were very, well, kind then, if you want that. But that's what, so, Edwin, we're there. Oh, well, we're there, fortnight, I think, firing camp. So, one, life was, we'd be allowed out at night into Egremont, but it was only pubs there, nothing else, really. But they run the Passion Wagon, as it was called, one night into Whitehaven on a Saturday. We're all in, that was a sort of a Saturday night out, so into Whitehaven we went, and that's where I met my wife at the local dance there. I met her on a Saturday. Arranged to meet her again next week sometime. And I caught the bus into Whitehaven. And we went to the pictures. And then the third time, we were moving on the Thursday back down south again. And I'd arranged to meet her on the Wednesday night. And I was a guard commander for the fire picket, so that squashed that. So my pal, who I still write to up in Glasgow, he did it for me, and I went over the wall and caught the bus into Whitehaven and seen my wife then. And that was the last time I seen her until Christmas 1947. I stopped writing to her when I was in Palestine, but I started writing to her anyway, and we got married in 48. But so that was, and then we came back from Nethertown in Egremont, same way, back to Preston North End, Lutterworth, and back to Southborough, back to base camp again. We were there, base camp, about a fortnight, and then we went down, we went back on gun sites then, round the Deal Dover area. We were at RHQ. Was it Northbourne?
Northbourne,
yeah. Not far from where there used to be a pit. Betty Shanger Collar used to be not far from there. We used to march over there for our baths, you know, because there was no... I played darts in in the Northbourne, in the pub, by oil lamp. That's how it was, you can tell, yeah. But we were in this big house. It was some in a walled garden. Some person that would have money. That's where we were stationed there. I went on leave for there and came back off leave. And
this would all be, this is March 44 you've gone to North.
March, yeah. March, about February, March 40, yeah. I just we were there about February, March. We came back about the 25th of March back to base camp at Southborough. I went on leave from Northbourne. And coming back on leave there, they must have had a bit of shelling going on there with the cross. And so the train was... We stuck in the they stopped the train in the tunnel for so long till it was all before we could come back, and then went into Dill, and I had to walk back across the fields and about 3 or 4 miles back to camp. This place there. While we were there, Northbourne, going back to Sergeant X again, another part of the training was map reading, which I liked. I also enjoyed me map reading. But they give us all maps of the area, but all in French. So it was names of the towns were fictitious French names and things like that. And we went off in parties of five, me as an NCO and four others. And we were given map references where we had to report to the different about 6 or 7 miles, something like that, we had to go. And we went off with inches of square mile, you know, the large scale maps, army maps, ordnance maps, which showed every little and down here. I acquitted myself quite well, put it that way. I went, and that was all right. Got all the way around and came back to Northbourne, and had to go before the officer then. How did you get on? He said to Sergeant X, how did Emery get on then? Oh, he did quite well. I had to put in wise on one or two things to correct him. Now, that robbed me, because he never had a clue. So I applied after that with my pal, Harry, to go to the airborne. He said we want, so putting a transfer to go to the airborne. Everybody had a red beret then. They were, little did they know what they letting themselves in for. But anyway, we applied to go, so we had to go before the signal officer, I think. Anyway, some officer we had to go in, explain why we went. So he asked me why. I said, well, yeah. I said, well, all I said was, you're not allowed to use your own initiative here. I said, you know, as I said, really, you can't use your own initiative. Anyway, to cut a long story short, it was turned down. The colonel said, no, train signalers, you know, and he didn't wish the invasion was coming up, as they all, everybody saw, and he only didn't wish to lose trained NCOs, so that was squashed. So that was finished. So the back to Great Bounds we went camp again after they did their month on the ACAC sites. It must have been tough on the gunners, because all those on the sites, you know, lived in bell tents and things like that, adjacent to the gun site and things, whereas our HQ was a bit different. It was, you know, all the odds in, but you had your quartermaster stores people there and the clerks that used to put in for the rations and all. And so it was a sort of a hodgepodge of people there, our HQ, but made up of, we all had to do our share of guards and things like that. But anyway, we went back to Southborough. So when we were at Southborough, Colonel Faithful went the end of March, and we had another colonel come then.
Who's that?
Colonel Eden, who was a relation, a cousin of Anthony Eden's.
What was he like?
No, he won the DSO in North Africa. He was a Royal Horse Artillery man. He was a regular soldier, you know. He won the DSO, evidently, in North Africa by rushing a battery or a troop of 25-pounders and blocking a gap in one of the lines and saving a breakthrough by Rommel. So that was what he got his DSO for, as far as I know. Now he's a different man again. Quite a nice bloke he was. He was a colonel, but whereas McFaithful said you wore your steel helmet, you know, gun crews wore steel helmets and all things like that, he sort of gave you the option, but if you got wounded, that was your own fault. He never actually said that. That was the sort of feeling you got, you know. When you were on active service, you didn't necessarily have to wear your steel helmet. That's how we... But he instigated more training. At the back of Great Bounds Camp was Bibborough Ridge, it was known then. That was a lame sort of busy running. So one of the doings there we had to do was run a mile in full kit, steel helmet, small pack, rifle and all that. And they take you up there and you line you up and then you start you off, six of you, and you run down there and they time you. You see, you go down there. Well, there's them, as I say, the coffers and smokers and that old bugger that. And they used to trundle along there at a nice steady speed. But little did they know, if you didn't do it within they never give you a set time. But if you didn't do it within the set time, you had to do it again until you did it. So those that put a bit of effort in, competed, it was all right, they finished. But other things were PT, bars, you had to raise your chin up over six times, so many press-ups, fireman's lift with your pal. Well, Harry was about 6'2" and about 15 stone, and it was 14 stone. It was me about 10 stone. It was all right for him, but hard work for me. So you had to do about 50 yards doing the fireman, all things like that to sort of toughen you up. And while he was there, prior to us, it must have been about Whitsun, I think, prior to the invasion, he had a regimental sports day. Batteries competing, Harry. And one did it be, as I said, I used to like running, I won the regimental mile. And I won a pound. That was the prize, 20 shillings then, which was a lot of money then. That was about 4 days, 3 days pay for me. But anyway, I just pipped home by a short head. And little did I know, but the officers were betting on running bets, because Colonel Lee was a horse racing man. He used to, and they were betting on who was going to, and he must have bet on me because I won it, because he was chuffed about that.
Did you enter any other races, or was
no? That was my forte. I used to go do a bit of training. It was a joke really, running around the camp. But anyway, it served me in good stead. And from there, I went on. What did I do then? I went on several courses from there. I went. This was Colonel Eden then, as I say, he was a. Another thing we used to have another thing he instigated was a scheme, whereas we were split up, our HQ signalers were split up into two squads of three, and we were commandos. And they took us out in the jeeps, you know, cap comforters on and all that business. And we had a break into the camp, which Great Bounds camp, no fence round, it was open. It was open. It's a big posh house in the state now. When I went down and looked, there were all executive houses and that on there. But you could get in the camp anyway, like you come up through the woods and get in, you come in this way and that. But we had a break into the without being discovered. So anyway, we got in the 365 back with our thunder flashes and throwing them about and things like that. But that was the sort of things he caught, one of them, one of the 365 batteries. It was a lovely sunny day. All I remember, caught him asleep in the ground. So he was captured straight. But that was another thing he did. But anyway, there was two or three courses there then.
Anything special or just...
Yeah, the first one was... I went with a... I don't know, he always picked on me, Emery, the regimental officer. So you're going on a course Monday. We went to Hayling Island with the Canadians, learning driving half-track vehicles and things like that for landing on the beaches in... well, we didn't know it was normally, but that's what was... So that's the first time I'd ever had jacket potatoes. They were with the Canadians. They were great lovers of great big jacket potatoes. Well, of course, I'd never seen one before. It was always boiled and roast potatoes when I was home and so on business. So we're there 5 days and did that course. And came back to camp again. I think I went on leave, and that was my last leave. I was March sometime. That was the last leave.
What were the other courses?
The next course was Deep Cut, where he got all the trouble now, where they're all shooting one another and whatnot. So went to Deep Cut there, the RA section of it, on a mines, another one, a mines course, dismantling or detecting the ones I remember was the S mine, the Shoe mine, the Teller mine, which was anti-tank. They also, I think, there was, no, they didn't patch it, but it was a glass mine as well. But there were several others. There was other mines, but that's the ones that stick in my mind. S mine, Shoe mine, Teller mine was the anti-tank. The Shoe mine and the S mine were anti-personnel, you know.
And how were you meant to clear them?
Well, they were taught, you know, as a bloke there, of course, only 5 days. You can't teach a 6 month course in 5 days. But they give you the basic, like, first thing, you found tripwires, and then you prodded with your bayonet, and you found one, and there was always a little hole in the plunger where you could stick a little nail or something through to stop the plunger from going down, but then you had to look for the tripwires, but you didn't cut the tripwires then, because you had to trace that way to see there wasn't another mine that end with the tension on, and all things like that, and then also with Teller mines, you used to have a detonator underneath as well, one in the side, besides the base plunger. So you learn all that, but as I say, it was teaching within 5 days what really it was a long. So anyway, we did that there, with, plus the Polish mine detector and all that. Because there's a little story come up about Normandy about this later on, see. So anyway, that was the last course I went on, and then we came back to Salisbury again. It was getting close then. I think that must have been about the end of May. It was getting close, or beginning, middle of May. I can't remember when. My mother and my sister came down to when the regimental sports was on, down to Salisbury and stayed. It must have been Whitsun weekend, whenever that was, used to be the first Monday of the month, didn't it, at one time. Came down to stay while I was down to see me, and the chap that got me, he said, I'll tell you where you could get a little billet in Salisbury. So I went to the house, and due to him, I was able to get put up bed and breakfast, this chap. He was a cook, actually. But then the invasion was coming up, so the next thing, Emery report to RHQ, and there was, I think there was about 18 other ranks and so many officers. And we were going on a special job with away from the regiment to do with the invasion. Didn't have to tell anybody. Lips were sealed, you were, but didn't know what it was. But anyway, we were all your kit, and I got rid of all my letters and whatnot else, burnt all what I couldn't take with me. And away we went down to somewhere outside of Tunbridge Wells, us in about five officers. and stayed there until the invasion started.
And what were you doing?
Well, we were just there waiting then. What the job was in Normandy, when we got to Normandy, what the job was, we went so far inland past...
Hang on, no. What were you doing before then? What did you train?
No. We didn't know what...
So you were just detached from the
others? We detached and stayed there, waiting for them to say, really, all we knew was going to run a concentration area in Normandy. We didn't... That was all it was. It was two wireless operators went, me and a Scotsman, and the rest of it was a couple of this, and a couple of sergeants, and about five officers and things like that.
So we'll come to what happened.
Yeah.
So you were detached. What happened then?
Well, we stayed there then until the invasion started. So we moved from there and went to West Ham Football Stadium. Stayed in West Ham Football Stadium then. Up by the other docks somewhere around about there, because you used to have little docks there, didn't they, at one time? King Edward Dock or whatever, and all things like that. Anyway, we stayed in West Ham Football Stadium with strict instructions. It's like rough there up in the stands and whatnot else. Had your teeth checked and everything checked to see if you were all right and medical and whatnot else. With strict instructions not to walk on the football pitch, whatever. Anybody caught walking on the football pitch, it was sort of a firing party. So they let us out one night there, and just down the road from the side gate where we went, two military policemen outside, I suppose, in case we tried to... go AWOL or something. Just down the road was, I can't think of that, got any, but the pub there, it was a docker's pub, and they looked after right roll in there, had a piano going, we couldn't do nothing wrong in there. Drinks was free, we had a hell of a hangover next morning.
And this was May?
No, this was June then.
June.
Coming up June, when, yeah, it was just about, run about, I should think, about June the 6th, and the invasion had started. We didn't know then, but...
It had actually started.
Yeah, just about then. But anyway, they let us out there, we had that night out, and then we moved down to... King Edward Dock or whatever it was, to board an LST, Yankee LST, which more so, we never had, all we had was our personal weapons, never had any bofors or anything like that, because it wasn't that sort of a job. It was only bring guns in, rifles and your own personal kit. So we went aboard this Yankee ship, loaded up, lunchtime, sailed down the Thames and anchored off Southend Pier about tea time. That's where the convoy made up. Now, I remember that several things about that Yankee ship. You could go there was no sleeping quarters that I could see, and I slept on. I made a little there was a little mess area, a cabin about twice as long as this, and about 6 foot wide, with a little mess table welded to the side of the ship, and I slept on there. That's where I was going to sleep at that night. Anyway, I left my small pack and rifle and all that there. And you could go down to the galley in the ship. You had to go down those steps, and the galley was at the bottom. And outside the galley was a table there, a table, another welded, and there was small tins of Ideal milk, which I never saw during the war, and a great big bowl of very fine, refined sugar. And in the galley wall was a tap, like a urn tap, and you could just go in there any time, fill your cup up with coffee, as much sugar as you like, 4 spoonfuls, a tin of Ideal milk, any time of the day, which made full advantage of. And we had to go for, and in the evening, we went for the evening meal, lined up at the, we had a hatch there closed.
Now, what day was this?
I think it was on
the 7th?
This was about... I landed about D plus 8, but we were 24 hours late, so whenever that was 2 days before, so it was about D plus 6, that was about the 12th of June then, something like that, roughly about 12, I don't know